This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello everybody and welcome to, today we have Tina Meyer. This is the mother of Megan Meyer, a lovely child that was developing to a lovely young lady, an artistic, charismatic, and adventurous woman, so close to her 14th birthday and beginning to discover herself when cyber harassment pushed her to suicide. Welcome to The People Speak. This is Samantha Legend and our guest is Tina Meyer. Tina, welcome to The People Speak.
Great, thank you.
Could you tell us, Tina, in your own words about the story? I know there have been so many different kind of spins to your story, and I'd like to hear it from you.
Okay. Megan was 13, and Megan was in the public school system from kindergarten through seventh grade. And Megan was diagnosed with depression and attention deficit disorder from the third grade on. Megan received medical treatment from psychologists and a psychiatrist from third grade through her eighth grade year. And Megan had the typical bullying that kids have in the school. You know, she would get called names such as fat and different things, but it was things that Megan could deal with. I would talk to her about it, and she got through that. When Megan went into middle school, Megan was in sixth grade, you know, had the normal, typical, same type of thing, the bullying, but again, Megan kind of got through it. Seventh grade was a really tough year for Megan. Boys stomped their feet behind her in the lunch line, calling her, you know, a cow, and it was just a really tough year. Megan could not figure out how to fit in, where to fit in. She wanted to wear the clothes that the girls she felt were popular. And it was just an extremely, extremely tough year. And the bullying got to the point where Megan just would come home crying and saying, "Mom, you know, I don't want to go to school anymore. I want to be homeschooled." And I finally, as a mom, couldn't take it anymore and decided, you know, we decided to put her into a private school because we just felt with the clothes and all of the things that Megan was trying to do, the bullying, all of these things, that she was not excelling. She was not doing well, and a huge change needs to be made for her. And when we switched her to the private school, this was a school that went from almost 500 children in just seventh grade alone down to 60 kids in the seventh, you know, in her new eighth grade class. Okay. So it was a huge difference. And there was no makeup. It was school uniforms, no jewelry, no fingernail polish, and it was going to be a humongous change. So we did. We changed, made this change. And for Megan, at first there was some resistance, but then once she started this new school, she started the volleyball team. She made new friends. She started working out at a local gym. And it was almost a relief to her when she started the new school.
So it took off the pressures of as far as her clothing, the makeup, wearing the right things. So the popular girls were, everyone wore the same uniform.
Right.
And then she was focusing. She was focusing more on the priorities of her education, right?
Right. It wasn't so much the waking up, trying to put clothes on that she didn't feel looked the way that she thought was supposed to look as the other girls looked. You know, if they were wearing a mini skirt, it doesn't look the same on one girl as it looks on another girl. And first of all, I didn't want her wearing a mini skirt. She was 13 years old. I didn't feel it was appropriate to wear to school. And
exactly.
It was always a battle. So, you know, she was doing very well, and Megan had asked, her 14th birthday was coming up, and Megan had asked if she could get a MySpace. And I wasn't too thrilled about the MySpace account because the year prior, Megan and one of her friends had made up, the girl down the street had made up a MySpace using another person's picture. I had no clue about it.
Is this Sarah?
Yes. Yes, it was her. And this is because, you know, any person, any child can make up a MySpace account if they have an email address. And parents will have no clue. Parents have no idea that they can do this. I found out because Megan spent the night at a relative's house and it was left on the computer. Thank goodness. And I immediately made sure that it was deleted off, and Megan, we put passwords on our computers from there on out. But at this point in time, it had been a year. Megan was showing signs of maturity. Megan was doing very well. And this is when I said, you know what, you can get a MySpace, but here are some rules. And the rules were, your father and I are the only ones that have the password. You do not even have the password. The MySpace must be, I must approve all the content on there. We must be in the rooms at all times when you're on the MySpace, and it must be kept to private. Now, our computers, we had two from the house, and both of them had password protection. So the kids could not even get onto the computer itself without having the password. So
you took almost all the precautions that most parents are worried about their kids getting online. And here you are taking all the precautions, yet something still happens like this.
Right. I thought so. And we also had a program on there called WatchRight, which monitors every instant message that goes back and forth and also monitors every Internet site. So Megan agreed. Megan got on this. And then 2 weeks later, Megan received a message from a boy named Josh Evans asking to be a friend. And I was sitting next to her. And she thought he was very cute. Her words were, oh, my gosh, Mommy's so hot. Can I please add him? And
yeah.
I said, you know what, Meg? You can add him, but if there's any negative words, anything bad going back and forth, he's immediately deleted. And what this boy did is this boy offered for her, he was almost 16, or just turned 16, he offered the positive things. You know, you have a beautiful picture, beautiful eyes. Those types of things. It was all very pleasant. There was nothing, you know, what's been out in the media is that there's been sexual content back and forth. There was nothing sexual that was said. If there was one thing sexual said, immediately it would have been deleted off that computer. The second.
Oh, wait,
I saw
let me back up a bit. I want to actually get to the friendship that you developed, that your family and the Drews had. I mean, I know that you guys actually vacationed together and you lived only doors down from each other. How did this develop into like a best friend relationship between Sarah and Megan?
Okay. Megan and Sarah went to elementary school together, and they were from fourth grade on, they became friends, and they would spend the night at each other's house. And Megan would go on family vacations with them. And I was a real estate agent, and I sold, you know, I became friends with their family because of their friendship. And, you know, our families never went on vacation, but Megan went on family vacations with them. And they would spend the night, like I said, at each other's house. And then I sold them their house that they lived in, and then I sold them a house in our subdivision, which was four houses down from where we lived. And they were friends for 6 years. And they were friends all the way up until the summer of seventh grade, when Megan switched schools. And then their friendship fell off. You know, just girls, they kind of go through those stages, and their friendship fell off. There was not a major blowout. It was just kind of some bickering back and forth, and it just kind of ended.
How did Lori Drew treat your daughter when she would go over there?
You know, in the beginning it was, you know, things were fine. After a while, Megan would, you know, because Megan had attention deficit disorder, you know, there were times that Megan certainly could be impulsive. And Megan would come home at times and say, you know, that Lori was being mean, or Lori told her to come home and make sure she took her medicine first before she'd come back down. And her daughter was much more reserved, much more, when she was told to do something, she did something. Where Megan was certainly the typical child, where she, you know, was more of the rambunctious child, and she was not the obedient child. And that was not something that was, you know, if there was something that was going to be broken in the house, it was Megan's fault. If there was something out of order, if Megan was down there, it was going to be Megan's fault, and I certainly was going to hear about it. And that's kind
but
of
more
the way
the vivacious and artistic side, you know, more that, where it comes down to how Sarah was more very reserved. Do you feel that Lori Drew kind of pressured down Sarah into becoming how she was and kind of stifled her spontaneity?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I certainly know that Sarah definitely was the type that would put her head down and do whatever she was told to do. That's the way it was. She was, would not go out of the lines. And Megan would always kind of veer out of the lines, you know. And that's kind of what made Megan Megan, you know. And it was looked certainly down upon if that happened at that household. And for Sarah, again, she did not dare to go out of those lines because she did not want to get in trouble. So I think that it was unfortunate for Sarah because
Absolutely.
It did not give her a way to kind of spread her own wings. She
mm-hmm.
was kind of under that her mother's hand as far as what she was able to do and not do constantly.
How did Lori and her daughter Sarah react when Megan actually needed to space herself and develop more of a distance since she was in another school and she had other friends? She, you know, how did Lori Drew and Sarah react to this?
Well, you know, Lori and I had many, many conversations when Sarah and Megan would get into arguments, and I would constantly, you know, tell Lori that, you know, listen, first of all, they are 13-year-old girls. And second of all, you know, if Megan is doing something, you know, I will absolutely talk to Megan about it because I will not let my child or any child treat another one in a bad way. But you also have to realize that if you jump in and interject at all times, there's no way that they're going to be able to decide or figure out how to work on the relationships now or in the future. But Lori could never let that be. When Megan decided to change school, and that's kind of how part of their friendship started to frazzle. And then when Megan, you know, I explained to her about switching the schools. I told Lori what we were doing. And she did not like that idea. She thought that was a bad idea. That we were talking about switching her schools. She knew that we were switching her schools because of all of the troubles that Megan was having, because we were trying to make things better for Megan. She knew this. I talked to her on the phone about this because I was so concerned and trying to make a better, fresh start for Megan. I remember specifically on the phone talking to her about this.
Mm-hmm.
She knew about
did
it
you
all.
Feel that Lori treated her children, or did you see them, her children neglected or put upon? I mean, you say that Sarah was more of a obedient child. Do you feel that she just had her so obedient and under her foot to have less of a ruckus at home or just took away from their childhood because of it, or how is that?
No, I've never seen any type of neglect.
Mm-hmm.
I had never seen anything like that at all. I had just, you know, it was always one of those things that just, Sarah was just one of those children that it was, she did what she was told. She was told to be home at 5:00. Sarah was going to be home at a few minutes before 5:00 to make sure she was there. And she was going to do the dishes and make sure that they were done. And that's the way she was. She was not going to push the envelope, no matter what. And
okay.
But, you know, I never saw any neglect at all.
Did you notice Megan changing, becoming like more depressed with since the association with the Drews? Did you feel her feeling just less, didn't appreciate her own spirit as much, just becoming more introverted?
Megan would hang out with Sarah, and at certain times, she certainly had fun. She would go to some baseball games, do different things, and she would have a good time. But then when it started to be, you know, well, why do you want to go home now, or why don't you want to stay for the entire weekend? Why do you do this? Or if she would do something and Lori would get mad or upset, then it became to the point where Megan was just like, okay, you know, enough's enough. Or she'd come home and say, you know, if I'd say, well, Megan, you know, Lori called and said you did this, Megan would say, you know, Mom, Sarah's not as perfect as everybody thinks she is. Or, you know, it was that type of stuff. So Megan would, you know, enjoy having a part of it, but then it was like all of the other stuff that went with it was almost to the point of, with Megan, enough was enough. You know, she got tired of Lori talking to her like she was, you know, she would say Lori was being ignorant or mean to her. And I would say, mm-hmm. You know what, if that's the way she is, you do not go back down there. You know, no one's going to talk to you or treat you like that. An adult especially is not going to do that. And, you know, so those were the things, but that really started happening towards the end, and that's when the relationship really started to fizzle out towards the end.
Okay. Did you have any motherly instincts prior to this going on?
As far as their friendship?
Of a bad association, trying to pull them away?
You know, I really didn't. Not with their friendship.
Okay.
I knew that with Megan, with being in the public school, I just had this gut feeling that something needed to be done. I didn't know exactly what it was, and this is why I knew that a major change needed to be done for Megan. And that's why I worked really hard to make sure and switch her to the private school. I wasn't sure if that was going to be a positive change or a negative. I was really hoping it was going to be a positive. As it turns out, for Megan, it was a great and wonderful positive thing because she was accepted by her new school. She really liked it, and everything was going wonderful. So that I knew, and I felt that had to be done. But as far as with their friendship, no. I never had any feelings or could have even dreamed that something like that was going to happen in the future, no.
So when Megan started pulling away and spending more time with her other friends, was there any reaction for Lori?
Oh, absolutely. She would drive down the street, you know, and stop in front of my house or call me at different times and ask, you know, what's going on, you know, that Sarah wanted to talk to Megan, or, you know, why wasn't Megan, you know, hanging out with Sarah. That was in the beginning part of it when they kind of were separating. And, you know, I would say, Lori, I'm not sure. I don't know why, you know.
Exactly.
And she would make comments that, you know, her husband, Kurt, felt that Megan was using Sarah, that only wanted to hang out with Sarah when it was convenient for Megan. And my comment to her was, you know, I'm sorry if you feel that way. My suggestion would be is if that's how Sarah feels, then the next time Megan calls, then I would tell Sarah that's how she feels and to not hang out with Megan then. That's my only suggestion. If she feels like she's being used, don't hang out with her then. That would
so
be the thing that you could
they
do.
They were actually
it,
trying to dominate the friendship.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And finally, thank goodness, when Megan, they actually got into school, they kind of left and left everything alone, and there was really no communication. I obviously know why now, but that had all ceased. And those were the constant things that I would get all the time from them.
Wow. It's pretty unusual for a parent to drive down the street and start calling the parents and and harassing them to have your daughter hang out with their daughter. That's pretty extreme there.
Right, and I would, there were many of times, even the other neighbors, when they would see her driving down the street or, you know, see her phone, you know, her ringing or walking outside, you'd hurry up and dart in the house. I mean, this was extremely common. Okay. And there was times that, you know, I would be outside or doing something, and Megan would see her, I would see her walking down the street. I'd run in the house, and Megan would tell her that I was home, and then Megan would come in the house and, like, point behind me and laugh hysterically because she knew I didn't want to talk to her. And Megan thought it was hysterical because I was having to talk to her, and I didn't want to talk to her. So that happened quite a bit.
So when Megan actually finally persuaded you to open her MySpace account, did Sarah already have an account?
Yes, she did. She had a MySpace account.
Okay. So Sarah immediately, as soon as she opened the account, wanted to be listed as her friend, right?
Right, and Megan would not add Sarah as a friend.
Okay. Oh, okay. So how long was it that Megan actually had the MySpace account before, quote, Josh Evans, a.k.a. Sarah Ashley and Mother Lori Drew show up?
It was about 2 weeks in that she had it.
That's very fast.
Yeah, and at that point, it was because, you know, Megan had denied Sarah's friend request because Megan, I just said, you know, to Megan, you know, let's just, if we don't want any drama started. So if we don't want any drama, let's not add people that we're going to have to deal with drama. And so Megan just said, okay, and then she just didn't add Sarah, and she didn't add people that she felt it was going to be something that she would have to deal with drama. And then Josh came on, and she added him. But she talked to a lot of different people. You know, and out in the media, there's been a lot of speculation that she was this poor, depressed child that sat online to find love. And, you know, how could a mom who let this depressed child just sit online all day long? Well, that was absolutely not the case. Megan had friends. Megan was a vibrant, happy kid. She just happened to also have depression. Not every person who has depression is a person who stands in the corner and bounces back and forth all day long. That's not a depressed person. A depressed person can also be somebody who also is happy, too. It's just there's differences. She found online, when she was online, she spoke to a lot of different friends, her friends who went to her past school, her new school, and she spoke to these people, but what it gave her is this Josh Evans gave her the confidence, not the confidence, gave her the comments that she did not receive from boys, which was, you know, beautiful eyes, what a great smile, what a beautiful picture, you know, how was your day at school, you know, if you were sad, you know what, I'm so sorry you were sad. Those types of things that girls at that age do, it's very rare to get from boys at that age. And for Megan, it made her feel very good. That's what she received from it. And it was almost a 5-week period that she received this, and it made her feel good.
Now, what kind of things did Josh, a.k.a. Lori, say to your daughter? I mean, just beautiful, did he say you're kind, you're sweet?
Oh, yeah, it was. You know, what a great person you are. You're my number one, you know, because on MySpace they pick who's their top number one friend. You know, and he would put, you're my number one friend. I feel so, and, you know, they use these words, I feel so friggin' lucky. And, you know, you put me in my number one so I can be so lucky. And they did those types of things. And, you know, have a great day. I can't wait to talk to you tomorrow. And, you know, oh, I see you have a new picture. What a beautiful picture. And asked how her, it's those types of things. And how your day was. What are you doing tomorrow? What do you like to do? All of those types of things. That
just so much interest in her. Just,
right.
I mean, she was the center of his world as far as she could see.
Right. And I, as a mom, was not stupid. I certainly, as the mom, because I was sitting there and I would read these types of things, would consistently remind Megan, now, Megan, listen, honey, he says that he likes you because he said, oh, I really like you a lot. Do you want to go out? And I said to Megan, now, Megan, come on. You cannot go out with somebody online. It's impossible. You know, it, but again, she didn't want to hear that, you know, but I knew, okay, this is pretty harmless. The child does not get dropped off at the mall. The child does not go anywhere without my knowledge or me knowing or talking to the parents. She goes nowhere. She doesn't go to the movies without me dropping her off or knowing where she's at. So there's nowhere or way that she goes anywhere. So I thought,
let me ask you this, Tina. How did, you know, his character, as far as what I see out there in the media, of course, it's tainted. So that's definitely why it's a pleasure to have you here. What kinds of, how did he describe himself? I know he was just completely well-developed. His mother was a single mother, and
right.
What else?
He was a single mom, or she was a single mom. His dad didn't care about them. He had a younger brother. His mom traveled. He was homeschooled because his mom traveled so much. They were originally from Florida. He liked playing the guitar. He was a very good-looking kid. He had brown, wavy hair. I think it was blue eyes, chiseled, you know, cheeks. He, you know, when they put in their features of what they like in girls, it was, you know, long brown hair, it was blue eyes. When they picked body type or body weight, doesn't matter, okay? You know, those types of things, which okay. It was pinned exactly to Megan. And
would Megan rush home to talk to him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Megan would come home and immediately want to sign on, and, you know, she'd be excited that there was a message from Josh and, you know, talk to him. And in the beginning, the messages, they were messaging each other back and forth quite a bit on the, you know, AOL Instant Messaging and also on MySpace. And it was back and forth quite a bit. And, you know, I would remind Megan, you know, listen, you don't truly know who the person is. Again, we think we do, but we don't. It could be a 50-year-old person. You just don't know that. You have to be careful. And do not get too involved on somebody when you don't know exactly who they are. And she would say, oh, come on, Mom. And I would try to remind her of different shows that are on TV that show these types of things. Again, as a mom, trying to continue to remind her because I didn't want her to get hurt. And, you know, these are the types of things that it provided.
You didn't want her to get hurt. But then.
Absolutely.
But then there was this ugly turn.
Oh, absolutely. She
this
received,
ugly turn. I mean.
Right. She received, you know, everything was fine. Megan, we went out the week prior to her 14th birthday and bought her a 14th birthday dress. It was a black and white polka dot dress. She was so excited to wear on her birthday. That Sunday night on October 15th of 2006, Megan received one message that just was a not nice message from him out of the blue that said, I no longer want to be friends with you. I heard you're not a nice person. It wasn't a horrible message. It was just a message that Megan was just kind of like, what are you talking about? Where did this come from? And she said that to him, what are you talking about from Josh? And there was no response. She went to school the next day, was in a great mood, handed out her 14th birthday invitation. She was excited. I picked her up from school. She came out of school bouncing, laughing, in great mood. But the second we got home, she wanted me to sign her onto the computer so she could find out what Josh had to say. And I signed her on, and the messages were, you heard what I had to say, you're not a nice person, and I don't want to be friends with you anymore. And Megan just sent the messages back, you know, yes, I am, as long as somebody's mean to me first. And these things went back and forth for a few minutes. And I told her, you know what, I need to go get your sister off the bus. I'll be back in a minute. I came back, and I said, Megan, you need to sign off. I've got to leave. And Megan said, Mom, let me just finish this. last message and I'll sign off. Well, I thought she signed off, and that's when I left. I called her half an hour later, and she was crying. And I asked her what was going on. That's when she said that she was still on MySpace. I told her to get off. I called her half an hour later to check on her because I was on my way home. She was sobbing at this point in time and said that I asked her what was going on. She said, I can't even explain it. You're going to have to come home and read it. And I asked if she was still on the MySpace, and she said yes. And I was upset with her. I said, Megan, please get off this MySpace right now. You knew the rules. Please get off. And I came home. And I knew that the reason I was upset is she knew the rules, and I knew it was going to be a disaster. She was devastated. I could hear it in her voice, and it was going to be a long night. I came home, and I started looking on the computer, and there were messages, bulletins, comments from Josh Evans to Megan, from Megan back to Josh Evans, and now another girl that used to go to the public school with Megan that now had moved away to a different state, and now her friend that joined in. And these were all going back and forth. And Megan was
What were the other friends saying? Were they supporting your daughter, Megan? And
no.
Saying, you know, telling him? Like,
no,
know,
they
stop,
were
saying this?
No, they were all, because Megan was trying to find out who it was. So Megan was asking Josh, well, is it this girl? Well, is it this girl? Well, if it's this girl, she's this. If it's this girl, then she's this. Because Megan was thinking that it was these people telling him that stuff. So Megan was trying to figure it out. Well, then these girls saw their name, this girl saw her name on it, and she lashed out at Megan. Well, her friend, of course, jumped on the bandwagon. So now it's Josh and then these other two girls that jumped in on Megan. And then the bulletins started going out, and the bulletins were things such as, you're a fat ass, you're a whore, and those are the nicest words that were on there. Those were the nicest ones.
Oh, my gosh.
So these things went all over the place.
Told her a whore, 13 years old.
Yeah. And
by the man
Megan
that
was,
she pretty much fell in love with.
Yeah, they were all horrible. They were all back and forth. And I was upset with her because as a mother, she was using profanity, and she didn't listen to the rules. And I had said to her, Megan, you know, one, you didn't listen to the rules, and two, I don't approve of you cussing and going back and forth. I mean, why would you? You should have listened to me, and we could have handled this. And that's when she looked at me and said, you're supposed to be my mom, you're supposed to be on my side, and took off running upstairs. And that's when I went upstairs and was discussing with my husband at the time of why she was on the computer unsupervised and what was going on. And in about 20 minutes, I just got a horrible feeling in my stomach, and I just took off running upstairs to her room and opened the door, and that's when I found her hanging from her closet. And we called 911, and a neighbor down the street, my daughter, younger daughter, went and got him, helped Ron do CPR back and forth, and she was transported to Children's Hospital. But unfortunately, Megan passed away the next day. That's when we went back and found out that Josh Evans' account didn't exist any longer. We did contact the two girls that were involved. And,
so Lori pretty much tried to end it before the birthday happened. So she wouldn't have to show up send someone as a Josh to the birthday party.
Well,
so, I mean, it was a convenient timing for her to end it right before Josh, a.k.a. Lori, is supposed to show up.
Well, the thing was, what actually truly happened, and this is what has not gotten on the media as of yet, what happened was who knows when this would have ever ended or how it would have ended or when she was ever going to get rid of this account. But the first message that went to Megan, the not nice message, came from the other girl across the street the night before. She was upset because Megan did not add her as a friend, because this password had also gone to her. So she sent that message saying, well, you're not a very nice friend, because she was upset that Megan didn't add her. Well, then when that happened, well, then the next day they jumped in the Drews, the daughter, and Ashley jumped in, and then that's when that two-hour period happened where they jumped in the bandwagon. Because all of the messages...
And all of them jumped on you, on her.
Right, right. All of the messages were traced from the FBI, from the IP address from the Drew house to our house. All of them, except for that one, only one message that came from a different house to our house. Other than that, they all came from the Drew house. And that's the thing. That's how it turned. That's why it switched the way it switched from that one message. And
earlier you were saying that against some of the media. Some of the media out there were saying that the discussions were sexual in nature.
Right.
And you say they're absolutely not.
No. There wasn't.
Okay.
The reason that they're getting it was sexual in nature is because we found out approximately five weeks after Megan passed away, we received a call from the neighbor across the street that lived across the street from the Drew family. We received a call from them saying that they had information regarding Megan's death. Now, this is after the day after Megan passed away, we went to the Drew family house to console their 13-year-old daughter because we knew that they had not been friends for a couple of months, but knew that her daughter would be devastated by the death of Megan. So we went to their house to console her. And they came to the funeral. We went to, Megan's birthday was November 6th, and Sarah's birthday is November the 9th. Their family asked us to please come to their house for her birthday. I went down there and sang happy birthday. We even went to the father's 50th birthday party because they begged us to come. And they had Sarah had a huge friend birthday party. And we were told that that everybody was forewarned, or a lot of the kids were forewarned to say nothing about the MySpace account because the Myers were going to be there. Because obviously at this point in time, other kids knew about this. But to hush, hush, be quiet, don't say anything about the MySpace because the Myers are going to be there. So when we got to this meeting is when we found out.
Okay, go ahead.
We found out that the Drew family was involved. The mom, her 18-year-old employee, and the 13-year-old daughter were involved. Now, we went home that day, and during this time, we had been asked by the Drew family to store their foosball table that they had bought for their children for Christmas. We destroyed it into a million pieces and delivered it into their driveway behind their van. That's when they called the police department and wanted to file a complaint against us for personal property. That's when the police came and Lori Drew filed the report that's now, the police report that's everywhere, which states that she just wanted to be able to tell her side of the story to clear her conscience, which says that she, along with the 18-year-old employee and her daughter, created this MySpace account in order to be able to gain Megan's confidence to find out if Megan was talking about her daughter behind her back. That's where the comment came in that messages became sexual in nature. They never became sexual in nature, ever.
Okay. Oh, it's an incredible story. It's an incredible story. I just have to ask you, as far as Jack Banas is concerned, he's the one that investigated it. What did he interviewed Lori Drew, and those were pretty in depth. When he interviewed you, how did that go?
Well, he actually never interviewed me. Jack Banas, Megan passed away on October 17th of 2006, and there was never an official investigation done at that time by the prosecuting attorney of St. Charles. There was
How
never
can
even
that
a
be possible that this happened to your daughter, yet you were never interviewed? How could that happen in the legal system?
Well, here's the deal. The FBI did their investigation. They said there was nothing they could do. When the media came out this past November of 2007 and put pressure on the prosecuting attorney, that's when Jack Banas said that he had never even seen the case, never heard anything about it, realized that there was never even an official police report done on this case. We had never even been contacted by the police department after Megan passed away. Nothing. Said that he was going to do an official investigation of the case. I received a call to come in and speak to him. This was the Friday before he released his media, you know, his the information to the media. So it was not, he did not interview me. He just wanted to speak with me. He interviewed Lori Drew and Kurt Drew for about 4 hours, he said. He said the reason that he did not need to interview me or anybody else is because he, one, did not believe the police report that was the original police report that Lori Drew gave. He didn't believe that one. He said he believed what the FBI took down, which was several months later, because the FBI report is consistent with what Lori Drew gave him. And I
Let's come back, Lori, in a few minutes, and we'll take a break. And then we'll come back to the interview, because there's some different things I want to discuss as far as the difference between the investigation of Jack Banas and the FBI.
Okay, great.
We'll be back in a few minutes. I'm glad you have joined us. This is Samantha Legend, and our guest is Tina Meyer. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you.
Got questions? The library has got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak radio show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
Maybe you're me.
Welcome back to the People Speak. This is Samantha Legend, and our guest is Tina Meyer. If you don't know of the story, this is the story of her daughter and the MySpace suicide, that where she was cyberbullied to the point of suicide. Tina, welcome back.
Great, thank you.
I wanted to get back into the part where, in the interviewing part, as far as Jack Banas and the difference between how Jack Banas handled it. For one, he didn't interview you at all.
Right.
He only interviewed the person that committed the crime.
Right.
That's quite a bit one-sided. And when it came down to actually interviewing Ashley, he didn't interview her at all because she claimed she had to go into a mental institution and pretty much escaped any kind of interview.
Right. Right. Jack Vanis, when I came in, explained to me that, one, really, he said that, you know, I had had a statement from Ashley the year prior. She had came to an attorney's office with my husband at the time, and the attorneys wrote down her statement. He stated that her statement at the time to what the FBI had was different. And then when he found out that she was under a doctor's care, is what he told me, a psychologist or psychiatrist's care, that he felt that she would not be a credible witness, and really he did not move any further on that. And
okay, I actually have a clip of that, Seth, I'd like you to play. This is of what Bannis actually said on the Today Show.
Okay.
And could you go ahead and roll that, Seth?
Still would not amount to harassment through stalking because it's only one conversation, only one course of conduct. And our law requires that it be repeated, meaning more than once.
There's only one conversation. And the law requires it to be one time and repeating. So he was actually able to get away.
Right. Right. What he explained to me for over the three-hour meeting that we had was they looked at harassment, they looked at stalking, and they looked at the endangerment of the welfare of a child, or endangering the welfare of a child. And what he stated was it did not fit in stalking because it was not, there was nothing sexual in nature, and it was not a stalking. Harassment because the entire time Megan was basically groomed. And the harassment happened the one time. The message the night prior was not of a harassing nature. The day that it happened within a two-hour block, and it did not happen more than once. Now, if Megan would have gotten back on and it would have happened again, then, you know, then they could have considered it harassment. But the way that the law is written, could not consider that harassment. And the endangerment of the welfare of a child, because they knew that Megan was on medication for depression and attention deficit disorder, that in and of itself is not considered the endangerment. That does not mean that they knew that she was going to commit suicide. Because of those three things, there was nothing that they could do. I said to him, why did you just interview them? And he said, regardless of who was behind that computer, no matter the percentage of time of whether it was Lori Drew, the 18-year-old employee Ashley, or her 13-year-old daughter, that they knew that it came from that house. It didn't matter who they proved or how they proved it. No matter what, the laws still were not there to convict anybody. So there was no point in going any further in interviewing all of the other witnesses, all of the other people to prove anything else because the laws regardless or were not going to be there to do it. And that I understood, and that's why I went further, and I am working with the senators to make sure that laws are in place so that these things can't happen anytime in the future.
Senate Bill number 818.
Right.
You're involved with this. To what is your role? You're going to go speak to the senators, the assembly?
Right. Senator Scott Rupp is the one that has presented the bill. And I went to Jefferson City and spoke in front of the Senate committee on behalf of this bill. And then also Representative Joe Smith from the city of St. Peter's also presented a companion bill a couple of weeks ago. And it had been started by the Internet Task Force that Governor Blunt had put in place because of the situation with Megan. And this is how all of this kind of came into place. And I also spoke at that Internet Task Force also. So now when I went and spoke at that Senate Assembly, now that those had passed and now it is in the Senate House. So we're waiting for that to go through, and it's another process. So hopefully once these go through and these get passed, obviously, at the state level, we're obviously going to move to the federal level. And, you know, my problem, again, is with Jack Banas, is the laws were not in place. There was nothing that could be done. My big problem is that when you're making a statement in public, he is interjecting his personal opinion that Lori Drew was not at home at the time. He's interjecting all of his personal opinions. You cannot,
yes,
as a prosecuting
opinion
attorney,
completely it goes against FBI investigations as far
absolutely
as where everything was coming from.
Right. He took a four-hour interview with these people, and he is, one, disregarding the original police report. He is taking her word from an interview that she gave to the FBI several months later, and the interview that she gave to him, and going by those two. And I said, well, you know what? People on death row also change their mind after they've been on death row for how long and say, I'm innocent now, too. Things happen. And if you're going to be a prosecuting attorney, you go by the facts and the facts alone. You do not interject your personal opinion. Or if you're going to do that, then you listen to my opinions and give all of the other facts from all the other people who have given statements. You don't just give one side of it, especially from the people who are being the ones who are the ones who are looking at prosecution, for goodness sakes. And that's my problem with Jack Banas, and where he has, to me, completely made a huge mistake, and I think it looks absolutely horrible in the public eye. And
okay, we have a caller. I want to go ahead and make sure that I have an invitation out for the people out there. Please feel free to call us internationally at 877-489-6350 or toll-free in the USA and Canada, 888-228-4494. And we actually have Basima from Michigan. And Basima, what is your question?
Hi, Lindsay. Thank you. Sam, thank you very much. And Tina, I just want to tell you, first of all, how desperately sad I am for your loss. What a tragedy. My question to you is twofold. First of all, have you as a parent been involved in any kind of educational program for children that are on the net through school systems, or any other kind of venue? The other question that I have is, has the fact that there's any kind of accountability, I guess, is right now in still being pursued, has the parents of the family, after all of this come and said, once they knew what was going on, have they apologized? Have they anything?
Okay. One, as far as an apology, no. They have made statements that they feel partially responsible, but the statements that they have made are maybe 50, 60, 70, or 80% responsible, but not 100% responsible. That's comments that they have made. As far as educational and those types of things, I have started a foundation. It's the Megan Meyer Foundation. And the foundation is to bring awareness, education, and positive change to children, parents, and educators in reference to bullying and cyberbullying. And what I have been doing over the past several months is going to schools in Missouri, and I've also done in other states, speaking to children, mainly in middle schools and high schools, about Megan's story and talking to them about bullying and cyberbullying and the effects and the devastating effects, talking to them about how to protect themselves online and tips that they can do, and basically how this affects how they don't realize that when they send a message, they click, they tell somebody something, they don't realize that they cannot take it back. When they send it, it's gone. They can't take it back, and that's something that they don't ever want to live with. So those are things that I am continuing to do. I also am working with Perry Aftab, which is StopCyberbullying.org, and we started something called the Megan Pledge, which is a pledge that we're taking across the country, and we're trying to get a million children to sign it in 2008. And it's a pledge that we're trying to get to all schools, which has the children sign it, stating that they are going to, you know, sign this pledge stating that they are not going to cyberbully. They're going to think before they click. They're going to be a part of the solution. And those are things that we're trying to do. So I quit my full-time job as a real estate agent, and this is my life now.
Well, you have, in fact, you definitely have a direction with your life, and
right.
I am amazed in the accomplishments that you've made. You seem tireless.
That's not me, so.
Yeah,
I do get tired, but you know, it's definitely my mission, and I know Megan's helping and guiding me, and I have another daughter. You know, her sister that also keeps me going, and it's definitely something that my goal has been, if I can take from what has happened to Megan and get the word out there and save one child and one family does not have to go through this horrible heartache and tragedy that has destroyed our entire family, then it's worth every hour of work that I go through, and everybody who's part of all of this goes through, it's worth it, because one child's life is worth all of the hours of work you have to do, definitely.
Let me make sure that I invite all of our audience that's listening to your website, www.meganmeierfoundation.com, MEGANMEIERFOUNDATION.com.
It's either .com or .org.
Okay.
Right. They can get to it by either. It's .org, really, but yeah.
Okay, that's good. It's been such a pleasure having you. I don't know what else. Let's see. I wanted to actually talk about the breakdown of the law, the Bill 818.
Okay.
It says an adult classified as anyone 21 years of age or older, a child, any person that is under 17 years of age. Those are classifications that I actually haven't heard. I mean, to actually call someone 17 years of age a child, but it's good that to have this clarified, that people actually know that any cyber harassment that goes on as by an adult against a child is actually a Class D felony.
Right, absolutely. And that's something that we've never had before because, you know, cyberbullying goes on all of the time. And it's typically, you know, you have it typically child to child. You know, we always hear of the predators, you know, but it's always sexual in nature. Not always, but most of the time it's sexual in nature, or it's the stalking. You know, it's the ex-husband or the ex-wife or the girlfriend, the boyfriend, or the predator. But, you know, mm-hmm. you can get that under the stalking. You can get it under the harassment. You can get it under different ways. In this situation, we don't have anything that shows, you know, where an adult contacts a minor. We have nothing on the books. And, unfortunately, this, you know, something like this has to happen in order to be able to get it on the books, and this is how we finally have classified it. My only aggravation is that you have all of these people who now, you know, the NCLU who come up and say, well, you know, we have to worry about First Amendment rights and we can't press this, we can't do this. I absolutely agree in First Amendment issues. We all have to have the freedom of speech. We all have to be able to, you know, open up our mouth and be able to use it in the way that we have to be able to use it. That is our right. But when you use that right to be able to threaten and be able to harm and be able to harass somebody, then your right is not a right that you have any longer. Because I cannot go on a plane and threaten that I am going to bomb it, then my freedom of speech has been revoked. You can't walk into a public place and threaten that you're going to do something to somebody, your freedom has been revoked. It is the same thing. You cannot use your freedom of speech to be able to harm, harass, or threaten somebody. That is where it stops. And that's where I think that they have to realize that a line has to be drawn. So I'm hoping
that... We have a question for the audience. I went to get in.
Okay.
Lindsay from Iowa is asking you, how do you feel about Internet anonymity? Do you feel that so long as it's not used to harass others, is it protected under the First Amendment, free speech?
I mean, I think the internet can be amazing, an amazing tool. I mean, I think as long as it's protected, I think, you know, we can certainly use it, freedom of speech. But when you use your freedom of speech to harass and harm and threaten other people, I don't think that that's okay. I think that things need to be done. I think all of these websites that are out there to anonymously hide behind other ones, to constantly harass other people and call people names and to do all of these things, I think that they are not to be allowed. I think that things need to be done about it. I don't think it's okay. It ruins people's lives, and people, unless people are affected by it, they don't realize it. People's lives are absolutely ruined daily.
Well, if this has been the Bush's daughter,
right.
I do believe that something would have been done immediately.
Oh, absolutely. There is a federal law that is out there that has been in place that I have been asking and asking and asking and asking. I asked Jack Banas. I asked the FBI. I've asked the U.S. attorney. I have asked on national TV the U.S. attorney to comment on it. I asked President Bush himself to please comment on it. It is the federal law that President Bush put into place on January 5th, 2006. It was put under the Violence Against Women's Act, and it states that you cannot contact somebody anonymously, whether you're going to or through the Internet, with the intent to harass, harm, any of these types of things. It's a federal crime. Now, I don't know why. I would love somebody to be able to give me an answer as to why this does not apply. It was in place prior to the time that Megan passed away. And if laws are put into place, now it's never been used in a case, but if they're put into place, why does anybody waste the ink and the pens and the trees for paper to write the laws if they're not going to be used? If not, somebody needs to give me an answer as to why, because what I stated before is if any of these lawmakers or if any of the high-powered politicians or President Bush himself had a family member that was affected by this like we have been, I guarantee you something would be done. But because it was a 13-year-old child who lives in Missouri, no one can give me an answer. But I am not going to rest until I get an answer, until something's done, because I have a long life to live. And I'm not going to let it lie until this is done and until something has changed, until laws are done on the federal level, and to make sure that children are protected, because this is going to continue to happen. The Internet is around. The Internet is continuing to grow. And the Internet's not going away. So I will continue to keep asking. I will continue to keep getting out there until I get an answer from somebody as to why that law does not apply and why these things don't get answered.
Tina, I'm so glad that you joined us today. I'm so glad we were able to share what's going on or what happened with you and to let everyone know about Bill 818, how important it is, and how we really need to be behind anything that's going to protect any future lovely lady from young man from getting injured, hurt, harassed, or abused.
Right.
So I'm so very, very glad to have you here. Thank you for joining us on The People Speak. My name was Samantha Legend, and next week we're going to have Peter Idusoji. So I would like to invite you to the show. He's the congressional candidate on the independent ticket in Minnesota. We'll be your guest on March 25th, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. was folded to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.